humble and personal person. I've had some personal association, and he never makes me feel like he's some famous author and monk. He just treats you like a friend, which is a rare quality to have for someone who's so accomplished and is in so much demand all across the world. So, and tonight's topic is really a topic for devotees. It's not a topic for new people. It's a topic for devotees. It's about Krishna. It's about Vrindavan. It's about Krishna leaving Vrindavan, but not leaving Vrindavan. So it's really a devotional topic, and we hope we'll give him our full attention. So thank you again, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, for coming, and welcome to ISKCON Chicago. Hare Krishna.
ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. नमः ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामी इति नामिने. नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे. हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. Hare Krishna. It's wonderful to be here. Welcome to all of you. Thank you for coming today evening. And I'll speak today on the theme of separation and union as manifested in Krishna Leela. Basically, we all are looking for happiness. But actually, if we think about it, we are not looking only for happiness. We are looking for happiness that is meaningful. And in the world, quite often the very things that give us happiness also cause us distress. If we like something very much, when we get it, we become very happy. When we lose it, then we become very shattered by it. So, now if we consider the material world to be based on the spiritual world, then everything that is present in the material world is also present in the spiritual world, but in its pure form. So, in the spiritual world, there is also apparent distress, but it is something very different from the distress of this world. When Krishna is separated from his devotees, at that time, they are both in great distress. But still, there is great ecstasy within that distress. And what that happiness means and how it relates for us in the world, we'll discuss this. So in our scriptures, at least in the two main epics, in the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, the theme of exile is quite common, isn't it? In fact, it is central to the narrative. In the Ramayana, Ram is exiled. In the Mahabharata, the Pandavas are exiled. Our acharyas say that actually exile is present even in Krishna Leela. And we may say, where is exile in Krishna Leela? So, what does exile actually mean? You could say exile means, oh, if somebody is sent out of their home into the forest or out of their homeland, out of their country, then that's exile. So for Krishna, leaving Vrindavan and going away was like an exile. In this case, that exile was because, it might not seem like an exile, because Vrindavan is a small place and it is like a forest. And from there, Krishna went to a flourishing kingdom, first Mathura and then Dwaraka. And he reigned powerfully over there. So given all this, we might say that actually, where is the separation in this? Where is the exile over here? But actually, what we love the most, if we are to go away from that, then that is the essence of being exiled. Exile is not just distance from the things that we love, but is primarily from the people we love. So for Krishna, now it's okay, and if we say that actually Krishna left Vrindavan and for him it was like an exile. Now, our acharyas, what they do especially, the Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, they take the 10th canto. So if we say have a world map, then we see a particular landmass and then we zoom in on it. And then it becomes bigger and bigger. And we see so many more details over it. But just one spot, but then it becomes a huge city with maybe skyscrapers, or maybe it becomes a huge even city with rivers and maybe hills, hillocks. You go further. The closer you go, the bigger you make the resolution, the more details you see. So like that, our acharyas, some of our acharyas have written the commentaries on the whole Bhagavatam. So the first acharya who wrote a commentary was Srinath Chakravarti. This is different from Vishwanath Chakravarti. Vishwanath Chakravarti came later. Srinath Chakravarti wrote the Chaitanya Manjusha. But even before that, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Kavi Karnapur, all of these many, many acharyas have zeroed in on the 10th canto especially. And then they've expanded. As we come closer and closer, we see things in clearer and clearer relief. So Jiva Goswami in the Gopal Champu describes how Krishna is especially very much afflicted by separation from Vrindavan. In fact, Kavi Karnapur is himself so afflicted that he starts to write a book about Krishna Leela, but by the end, when Krishna departs from Vrindavan, he just doesn't have the heart to write anymore. And that's why Kavi Karnapur's book, and it's called Anand Vrindavan Champu. Now the word champu means especially that it's a particular kind of literary composition where some verses, some passages are in text and some in prose. And that's why you have, if you read these books, there are different numberings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you'll have 2. And then 6, 7, 8, and then 3. 3, 4, 5. And then it'll go to 9, 10, 11. The numbering is like that because this is the particular poetic composition, that's champu. So Ananda Vrindavan, that means he was the joy of Vrindavan. Now Gopal, of course, is the lord of the cows. Now why is it that Jiva Goswami talks about Gopal, he gives the name Gopal Champu, but normally Krishna in Dwarka or Krishna in Mathura, we wouldn't consider him to be Gopal. He's Dwarkadhish. He's Yadunath. So what Jiva Goswami does is, Jiva Goswami doesn't stop at the Vrindavan pastimes. He gives the Mathura and Dwarka pastimes also. But he reveals how Krishna, even in Mathura and Dwarka, remains Gopal. Although he's Yadunath and Dwarkanath, but he is still Gopal at heart. At heart, He's still longing for Vrindavan constantly. And that is what makes this a very sweet and endearing picture of the heart of Krishna. In some ways, Jiva Goswami is setting the record straight. That means, what is the record straight? Often we talk about how the gopis in Vrindavan were afflicted by separation from Krishna. And that's true. And he also describes that. Not just the gopis, but all the Vrajavasis. This couldn't bear the separation from Krishna. But he also describes how Krishna could not bear separation from the Vrajavasis. Now, if you say, we may say that, okay, if Krishna wanted to be with Vrajavasis and the Vrajavasis wanted to be with Krishna, then why did Krishna even have to go ever go? So, that is where the whole theme of exile comes up. In the case of Krishna, in the case of Ram, there is a specific instruction by his father, who was compelled by his stepmother. And that's why he was in the kingdom, but he had to leave. He had to go. In the case of Krishna, everything about Krishna Leela becomes much more complicated. Because Krishna reveals in many ways the complexity of divinity. Ram, there are also some certain actions of his which are difficult to understand. But in majority, Ram depicts the ideal character of divinity as understood by our standards of idealness. Of course, there are some things which are difficult to understand. But more or less, we all have certain understandings of morality. And Ram acts according to those. Now, Krishna demonstrates that God is not restricted by our morality. So Krishna does certain actions which go beyond what we would consider moral, but they are not immoral. There is moral, there is immoral, and there is transmoral. It is beyond morality. So what Krishna does is like that. So in the case of Krishna, as I said, everything was complex. So Krishna had two parents, two sets of parents. He was born in Mathura and then he was taken to Vrindavan because his life was under great threat. And then Krishna lived in Vrindavan, and while he was in Vrindavan, the Vrajavasis adopted him and he adopted Vrindavan. He adopted the Vrajavasis. So in fact, in the 10th canto, Garga Muni doesn't clearly tell the Vrajavasi that this Krishna is actually the son of Yadu, son of the Yadus, son of Vasudev. He says, in the past, he was the son of Vasudev. So now that is an open-ended word, in the past. So then what does Nanda Maharaj think? In a previous life. In a previous life, he was the son of Vasudev. Now he is my son. He's so nice. Our families are connected through a reincarnational connection. He feels happy. And Garga Muni also doesn't tell that he is Narayan. He says, your son is like Narayan. Now actually, there is no one like Narayan. Because Narayan is a Samurdhva. No one is equal to him. What to speak of anyone higher than him. But he leaves it again open-ended. And he thinks, oh, my son is like Narayan. It means, must be blessed by Narayan. He must have some qualities like Narayan. So neither his divinity nor his royalty are known to Krishna or even to the Vrajavasis. Now of course we can say Krishna is God and Krishna knows everything. Yes, but that's not the point of Leela. In Leela, Krishna conceals his divinity so that love can reign supreme. And thus, Krishna doesn't always act as if he's God. He acts as if he's just endearing coward boy. When required, suddenly he will manifest his potency, his godhood, his phenomenal power. But that's not what he always manifests. So then what happens? In the case of Krishna, when he's about 10, at that time, there's a summon from Kamsa. We are going to have a Malla Yuddha. We're going to have a wrestling match. And we want the Vrajavasis to come and enjoy the spectacle. So when this is told, because Kamsa is the king, it's a summon from the king that cannot be refused. So then, Kamsa specifically sends Akrura to get Krishna. And the Vrajavasis say, we will also go. And then, so at one level, the king can't be disobeyed. And Krishna could have refused to go, but Kamsa might have attacked Vrindavan. Until now, Kamsa's attacks were, we could say, secretive. That means that sometimes somebody does something wrong, but at the very least, they don't do it openly. There's a saying that hypocrisy is the last respect that vice offers to virtue. Hypocrisy is the last respect that vice offers to virtue. What that means is, if somebody is doing something wrong, and at least they conceal it, that means they want to at least act as if they are good. That means they respect the public image of virtue. At least that much respect they are offering. But if somebody is robbing publicly, then that means what? They are not even trying to conceal. There is not even hypocrisy, there is perversity directly. It's like somebody robs something, and at least they hide and they sneak and they take it away. But if somebody publicly steals from someone and nobody dares to oppose them, you say, this is horrible. Sometimes in some areas of the world where the mafia rules, if somebody goes and steals, if somebody goes over there and they're robbed, and then they go to the police. The police say, why did you go there? Even we don't go there. So, when there is that, crime is everywhere, but when crime is so open, then it is terrible. So hypocrisy is the last respect that vice offers to virtue. So till now, Kamsa, although he is sending demons, but there are demons who are just coming and Krishna is finishing them off. It's not publicly known. Kamsa has not sent an official messenger. He's not sent an official army to attack Krishna or Vrindavan. So Kamsa is secretly attacking and Krishna is playfully dismissing all of them. So that means it's a war going on. Just like say now currently India, Pakistan, there's a lot of heat. So there is cold war always going on, but a hot war means actual continuous wars are happening. So between Krishna and Kamsa, a cold war was going on. Now if Krishna rejects Kamsa's call, then that is an open defiance to the king. And then Kamsa will send his army. Full wrath will descend on Vrindavan. And Krishna doesn't want that. So for the protection of Vrindavan, Krishna leaves. At one level, we can say Krishna can protect everyone. But, and that is true, no doubt. But if you see, in Vrindavan, even Krishna's killing of the demons is also playful. The mood of Vrindavan is such that Krishna doesn't pick up any weapons. Bala kridanakam iva. In the Bhagavatam, in Uddhava, is remembering Krishna's pastimes. He says, Krishna, we killed all the demons as if it's like a child playing. Now, one big horse comes in and Krishna just puts his fist forward. And he suffocates. Who was that horse? Keshi. Now, some demon comes and carries Krishna into the sky. Krishna goes for a free joy ride. And when he has enough of a ride, then he just hugs Trunavart. And then Trunavart starts thinking, oh, this boy is frightened, that's why he's hugging me. But Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur describes that actually Trunavart did not die because he crashed down. Krishna hugged him so tightly that he lost his life air at that time only. And then his dead body crashed down. So he's just a child hugging and he's finished. It's all playful. And Krishna doesn't want to spoil this playful mood of Vrindavan. So when there are no weapons used in Vrindavan, and he doesn't want Kamsa to come with his full army with all his weapons. And so if you see, he sends demons who are wizards. None of those demons come with weapons to attack. They change their forms and many of them try to sneak in. So there is no open conflict in Vrindavan. Conflict is there, but it is covert. So Krishna doesn't want the peace of Vrindavan to be disrupted by an overt attack of Krishna, of Kamsa. That's one reason why he decides to oblige Kamsa's request or Kamsa's command. It's not a request. So people in authority, when they give a suggestion, it's not a suggestion. It's actually instruction. And if the suggestion is met with rejection, then there is destruction. And they can go completely out of control. I was at a place and there's one devotee, he'd get angry with everyone. And then, everybody was very afraid and hurt by that devotee's anger. And then many devotees talk with me, and then I was talking with that particular devotee. He says, I don't have any anger issue. People just need to stop making me angry. So, for some people it is like that, my way or the highway. So now, Krishna didn't want to openly provoke Kamsa. So it was in a sense a request, but it was also a command. So Krishna went. Now when he went, at one level, it's the first time Krishna is leaving Vrindavan. And all the Vrajavasis were apprehensive. But among them, the gopis who had the most foreboding. Foreboding means, it's like an initial indication. Something terrible is about to happen. Now, when things are happening, some people have a very sharp sense of foreboding. Some people don't. So they felt that if Krishna goes, he will never come back. And they tried talking with the Vrajvasi, they talking with Nanda Maharaj and others. But Kamsa is calling, he's going, he will go for that Malyuddha, he'll come back. They tried every means to stop Krishna, but they couldn't. And finally, when Krishna was about to go, they laid down in the chariot, in front of the chariot. They said, Krishna, if you want to go, you'll take our life with you. But why should our bodies live over here? You ride over our body and let us die. And Krishna got off the chariot. And then, actually, this is the first time Krishna and the gopis have very loving interactions in public, because they meet covertly, not overtly. It's the first time. Visrujjala jamrurudu susmaram govinda damodaramadaveti. So it is described in the Bhagavatam. Visrujjala jam, whatever shyness they felt, they give it up. What is the use of our shyness if our Lord is not there? Then Krishna, they came out, they begged to Krishna to stay. Krishna pacified them. And at this point, Krishna had a full intention to come back. I'll just come back in a few days. That's what he planned entirely. And then he went from Vrindavan to Mathura. And there Kamsa's real face came out in public. And Kamsa tried to have Krishna assassinated, but Krishna turned the tables on him. And when Kamsa was killed, at that time the Yadus celebrated. Actually, it was not a celebration of joy, it is a celebration of relief. It's like a tyrant is dead now. Suppose somebody has a long time sickness, the sickness is relieved, it's a relief, not so much joy, but they're happy. And then the Yadus came and they offered the crown that Kamsa had been wearing to Krishna. It's one king has been killed, then whoever has killed that person will become the king now. So now comes Krishna said, how can I become the king? He said, Kamsa had unfairly seized the throne from his own father, Ugrasena. He said, he should become the king. And the Yadus were so touched. They said, he's so powerful, but he's also so respectful. He doesn't think that by my power, I will claim the kingdom. He was giving the kingship to Ugrasena. And they're very pleased. And then they say, oh Krishna, you're so gracious. That although you'll be with us, and you will be in the kingdom, but you don't want to be the king. And this is the time when Krishna starts, what's going on? He says, I will not be with you. I belong to Vrindavan. I'll go back to Vrindavan. He says, no, how can you go back to Vrindavan? Yes, you belong to us. You are the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Now Krishna, I am the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. Now there are some indications that Akrura tells this to Krishna. That's also what is used to persuade Krishna to come. But there is something which is a knowledge of the head and something which is knowledge of the heart. So suppose somebody was born to certain parents, but then for some reason those parents couldn't take care of that child. And then that child is adopted by somebody else. Then in the child's heart, parenthood is not just a matter of blood. It's a matter of connection of the heart. So even if Krishna, Vasudeva and Devaki are my parents, his heart was in Vrindavan. He said, I'm going back. And then he said, no, I'm not the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And then the Yadus say that actually, don't you know that there's a prophecy that it is the eighth son of Vasudeva that will kill Kamsa. And now today you kill Kamsa. This proves that you are the son of Vasudeva. And Krishna says, Krishna thinks, and he says, okay. But still, I grew up in Nanda Yashoda. He says, Kamsa is killed now. I'll go and live with them. I may be their son, I may be the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, but my parents are Nanda and Yashoda. So then they say, no. If you go, now Kamsa, it says Kamsa was a terrible person, but at least because he was so terrible, we were safe. Now we will be under double attack. How? Firstly, it is all the friends of Kamsa. They will want to attack us. Because they will want to take revenge for his death. And then, because Mathura is prosperous, there are other demons who may not have been the friends of Kamsa. They will want to attack to take over Mathura and get the wealth of Mathura. And then Krishna is still reluctant. And then they say, once they come to know that it is you who killed Kamsa, even if they come, they will not be satisfied by attacking and destroying Mathura. The friends of Kamsa will want to come and attack you. And if you are in Vrindavan, they will come there. And when Krishna hears this, at the time, Krishna resolves. Now Krishna is at one level, he's just a 10-year-old boy. At another level, he is a warrior. Sometimes, see, it's we grow not by biology, but by responsibility. There are some people who might be 25 years old and they are just like a 5-year-old child. Things go wrong and they cry and they throw a temper tantrum. Of course, a 25-year-old child, then they throw a tantrum, there is nothing attractive about it. It's ugly. And sometimes they may throw a tantrum by picking up a gun and shooting 100 other people. And they may kill themselves also at the end. So, we grow up by taking responsibility. And sometimes some children who don't have adults in their family, or if their parents are not there or whatever, then they grow up. Even when they are young, they are forced to grow up. And you can see it just in the way the children deal with each other also. Some children, even at 5, 6, 7, they are responsible. Some children at 17 are also not responsible. So we grow not just by biology, but by responsibility. So biologically, Krishna is transcendental, so there's no biology. We're talking about biology simply in terms of chronology over here. In terms of chronology, Krishna is still just a 10-year-old boy. But in terms of responsibility, he is grown up. He has big responsibility on his shoulders. And see, sometimes some children may also be mature, but still there is a child within them also. You cannot just wish away biology. So we will see this tension between biology and responsibility there. Now what happens, in general in our tradition, whenever anybody is doing something negative. So for example, there are good characters, there are some good characters, but as a group, somebody is doing something negative. Say for example, it is said the Kurus, they defy Balaram. And they say that, Balaram, we will not give Samba back. And then there is a fight between the Kurus and Balaram. So at this point, which Kurus were defying? That's not mentioned. Obviously, probably it was not Bhishma. It might be Duryodhana, or it might be Dhritarashtra, or whoever else. So similarly, among the Yadus, who are the Yadus who are telling Krishna, stay, stay, stay? That Gopal Champu doesn't mention that. And the Yadus say that, actually, they leave it to Krishna now. That you have to stay with us. He has to stay with him, and he has to tell his parents that I am going to stay here. For a 10-year-old child to be told to tell that, it's terrible. Sometimes, if a mother and a father have a fight, then generally there can always be fights, but in cultured families, the parents will never quarrel or fight in front of their children. They will maybe in a closed room and the children not there, then they will bring out their issues. But if the parents are also like children, then they will use the child to fight. The father will tell something bad about the mother to the child, and the mother will tell something bad about the father to the child. And that becomes terrible. The poor child becomes like a tennis ball being tossed here and there. So now, in this case, it is Krishna who has to tell Nanda Maharaj. And Krishna goes, and Nanda Maharaj is very, at one level very happy and proud that his little boy, Krishna, has killed Kamsa. He's a great hero. So then, and Krishna comes. And just by seeing Krishna's face, Kamsa understands. Sorry, not Kamsa. Nanda Maharaj understands that something is terribly gone wrong now. You know, when two people are very close to each other, they are sensitive to even the smallest expression on the face. And when two people are desensitized, then they can't hear even the loudest scream. So now, Nanda Maharaj has a big sense of something horrible is about to happen. And Krishna tells that the Vrajiva, that the Yadus are claiming based on the prophecy that I am their son and that I should stay here so that they are protected from the friends of Kamsa who will attack now. Now when he hears this, the Maharaj was thunderbolt. How can you are our son. Your Yashoda is my son. Then suddenly Nanda Maharaj starts laughing. And laughing. Sometimes laughing is the only way you can stop yourself from crying. And then he speaks sarcastically. He says, it is our fortune that great people are claiming ownership over that which belongs to us.
So, Krishna is our son, but
they are claiming ownership over it. So what is their greatness? He's sarcastic. We are small people. We can't fight against them. How are they? Great people should give something to small people, not claim what is from there from the small people. So he's sarcastic. But then he says, Krishna, if you are going to stay here, I'll also stay here. He says, we'll form a tent and we'll stay outside Vrindavan, outside Mathura, and we'll see you every day. He says, no, you cannot stay here. He says, what about Mother Yashoda? He says, Yashoda can't live without you. She will also come here. But what about the cows? He says, they will also come and be here. They also love you. And Krishna says, but the cows, they need grass to graze. We have so many cows now that they can't live on the small areas around Mathura. They need the wilderness as pasturing grounds. And Ananda Baba, we are the servants of the cows. They are not our servants. We have to take care of them. You please go back to Vrindavan. And Ananda Maharaj, every word of Krishna, Ananda Maharaj's heart is sinking. And now, he's also worried. He says the gopis are worried that if Krishna goes out of Vrindavan to Mathura, then yes, we are simple village girls. And there are sophisticated ladies in Mathura. Krishna will forget us. Ananda Maharaj is also fearful that what can we in Vrindavan offer to Krishna? Vasudeva and the Yadus can offer in such royal opulence. Will Krishna forget us also? And Ananda Maharaj says that we will come regularly to see you. And Krishna becomes extremely grave. Almost like the color of death is there on his face. He says, no, Nanda Baba, you can never come to see me. What? He says that if the friends of Kamsa, who have now become my enemies, come to know how close you are to me, then in order to hit me, they will hurt you. They will attack Vrindavan. They will disrupt Vrindavan. And I cannot be at both places at the same time. So let the world think that I was in Vrindavan just to live there while Kamsa was ruling here. And after I left Vrindavan, I forgot Vrindavan. And there is no longer a bond between us. And that way, even if all these demons come, they will not trouble Vrindavan. They'll come to Mathura, and I'll fight Mathura, and I'll protect Mathura. And now for this, it's a deadly blow for Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj says, we will send spies. Spies will not appear like us Vrajvasis. And you please inform about your well-being, and we will send news from here to you. And in this way, Krishna has to put a stone on his heart as he watches Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda has not come. Nanda Maharaj and the Gopas go. So just as the gopis are watching when Krishna is departing, similarly, Krishna is watching when the Mathura Yadus Vrajavasis are departing from Mathura. And actually, in many ways, Krishna's situation is worse than the situation of the Vrajavasis. How is that? The Vrajavasis are all together in their love for Krishna. At least they can talk with each other. They can talk with each other and say, oh, Krishna was so wonderful. In fact, the gopis want to do the opposite. At one time, the gopis decided that if Krishna has left us, Krishna has forgotten us, why should we remember him? We will also forget him. But they say that our mind is very uncontrolled. Although we don't want to think of Krishna, the mind keeps going to Krishna.
So their problem is the opposite. We want to think of Krishna, but our mind keeps going to other things.
And the gopis decide, actually the great yogis, they say that the way to control the mind is to practice yoga.
So the gopis become yoginis. And they sit down in meditation to control their mind so that they will not think of Krishna.
But they sit down, all of them sit down in meditation. And suddenly, in the heart of one of the gopis, the remembrance of Krishna just bubbles forth. It bubbles forth, it bubbles forth in her heart, and it bubbles forth through her lips. And starts speaking, you know, Krishna did this. And all the gopis forget their meditation. And they all, yeah, at that time Krishna did this, you know, you did this, and that happened, and that happened. And they keep getting lost in talking, and they say, hey. Then after some time, one of them remembers, hey, we were meant to forget Krishna, what happened?
So, we get distracted from remembrance because of our attachment to the world.
And the gopis get distracted from forgetfulness because of their attachment to Krishna. So at least for the gopis and the Vrajavasis, they were there and they could share with each other. Talk about Krishna with them. But Krishna couldn't talk about the Vrajavasis with anyone. Not because all the Yadus were very fearful that what if this Krishna, if Krishna remembers Vrindavan, then Krishna may go to Vrindavan again. So we don't want Krishna to go to Vrindavan. So they would not talk about Vrindavan and they would not let Krishna talk about Vrindavan. And then the children are very responsive. Now, if the children are doing something and the mother starts frowning at her, glaring, child starts becoming apprehensive. Unless the child is very naughty, then they will deliberately do it. But otherwise, children are very socially responsive creatures. So Krishna cannot talk about Vrindavan to anyone. It's like, I have written a book on the reincarnation. And there, many children remember previous lives. And one of the common accusations by skeptics is that this is all a hoax created by the parents and they have programmed the children. But actually there are many cases where the parents want their children to forget their previous life. And when the child remembers the previous life, when the parents, they threaten the child, they chastise the child, they sometimes do some black magic on the child. Especially if there are some Muslim children who remember a previous life as a Hindu. And the Muslims don't believe in reincarnation and they don't want to have anything to do with Hindus. So in their own tradition, they have black magic. In fact, they had one child who was, there's some black magician told them that you just put him on a potter's wheel and have the potter's wheel swung anti-clockwise. And by that, his brain areas have been disturbed. They'll become set right. And this child was swung on the potter's wheel every day for 30 days. And he would... By the end of it, he would just swoon. And next day again. And finally, after that, the mother couldn't bear it. No, you can't do this. You will die like this. And then finally, they reported the case. And then they tried to find out who were the parents. So, the point is that it's not that the parents want to create a story. Parents want to suppress the story. So, for the Mathuravasis, they wanted Krishna to forget his previous life. And then... As they wanted him to forget, Krishna couldn't talk with anyone except Balaram. And now Balaram and Krishna would talk, and still, what would happen? Although he couldn't talk with anyone else. And then Krishna couldn't even. For Krishna, who was just a 10-year-old boy, suddenly if you tell a 10-year-old boy,
that the mother, the lady whom he considered to be the mother, she is taken away from him, and some other lady told, she is your mother. Now Krishna was respectful, but Krishna couldn't be intimate with Devaki. And Vasudeva saw this. And when Vasudeva saw this, at that time, Vasudeva decided, I have to do something about it. And then it is not good for a child if he can't be affectionate with his mother. But then he decided, let me get Rohini back. Because Rohini was there as Krishna grew up. So she can act like a bridge. And when Rohini comes, Krishna and Balaram go running to her. And they pull themselves around her thighs, around her legs, and they pour out their heart. And then Rohini says, I will speak to the Mathuravasis. And she tries to tell them how much Krishna was loved by the Vrajavasis and how much Krishna loved the Vrajavasis. And the Yadus say, Rohini, are you on our side or have you also become the Vrajavasi now? This Vrajavasis, I don't know what kind of sweets they make and they feed, where anyone who goes there, they become on their side. When Rohini also meets such disapproval like this, Rohini also stops speaking about Vrindavan. And thus, in a sense, Krishna's plight is worse than the plight of the Vrajavasis. Why? Because the Vrajavasis can at least talk about their object of love, Krishna. But Krishna cannot talk about his object of love, Vrajavasis. If we are serious, dedicated devotees, and if we go to a place which is God forsaken, which is, you could say, Krishna forsaken, then which is devotee forsaken, then it's a big difficulty. There's no one to talk about Krishna with. What do you talk? It's quite difficult. So for Krishna, it was like that. So for Krishna, it was an exile. And in this case, Krishna accepted this exile. Aryavachasayadagadaranyam. It's described that it was Nanda Maharaj told him, while you are here, obey Vasudeva. Because Vasudeva is like your father. And Vasudeva told, obey the Yadu elders. Because these are all elder to you. So, Aryavachasa, because he considered all of them respectable superiors. For Krishna, Mathura was like a forest, a wilderness, an exile. But Krishna lived there. And then we may say that, okay, Krishna was there. And one day the Vrajavasis came and they found the whole Mathura was empty. Not the Vrajavasi spies came. The whole Mathura was empty. What happened? Later came that Krishna has gone to Dwarka. And at least Mathura Vrindavan are close by. Dwarka is the opposite side of the country. How will we ever go to Dwarka now? Why did Krishna go away like that? Krishna's heart was with the Vrajavasis. Krishna was thinking that each time any army comes to attack, for example, Jarasandha came to attack, so that army would come by the path of Vrindavan. And all the Vrajavasis would have to leave with their family members and with their cows, and they had to go and hide in the mountains. And again this was happening. And the life in Vraja was getting disrupted. And Krishna felt that sometimes the demons might just become so wild. Sometimes what happens? Like, sometimes demons want to kill someone, and if they can't kill someone, they find someone to kill. Like we have Jagai and Madai. They wanted to beat Nityanand Prabhu and Advaita and Haridas Thakur. And when they couldn't, they ran and ran, they couldn't find, and they turned to each other and started beating each other only. So when that Kshatriya vigor is there, you have to fight against someone. So Krishna was afraid that, of course, God is never afraid, and still he is afraid for his devotees. So Krishna was afraid that sometime these demons, they might in their anger destroy Vrindavan and destroy the Vrajavasis also. So Krishna said, I will go far away from Vrindavan, so that the demons will not go to Vrindavan. So Krishna went to Vrindavan, created Dwarka. At one level, it was to protect the Mathuravasis. But another level, it was to protect the Vrajavasis.
So this is why Krishna was away. Krishna left Vrindavan because of the call of duty. So God himself demonstrates to the world that sometimes our duty and our heart may pull us into different directions. And Krishna honored the call of duty. At the same time, Krishna never left Vrindavan. Vrindavan parityajya padam ekam nagacchati. The Puranas say that Krishna doesn't even take one step out of Vrindavan. Now this of course is understood at multiple levels. Vishwanath Thakur says that there are two Krishnas. There is Vasudev Krishna and there is Vrindavan Krishna. And that Vasudev Krishna is the son of Krishna, was born to Vasudev. Vrindavan Krishna was born. Two children were born to Yashoda. And this Vasudev Krishna and Vrindavan Krishna get, what happens is, when Vasudev Krishna comes, or Vasudev brings the baby Krishna, the baby Krishna falls into the Jamuna. He falls into the Jamuna and he can't find him anywhere. He's frantic and finally he finds. But who he finds is Vrindavan Krishna. So Vasudev Krishna disappears into the Jamuna. There are different explanations given. And then when Akrura is taking Krishna back to Mathura, at that time Krishna says, let me go and bathe in the Jamuna. And so when Vrindavan Krishna goes to bathe in the Jamuna, and Vasudev Krishna comes out. So Vrindavan Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. But he becomes unmanifest in Vrindavan. So when Vasudev Krishna departs and goes to Mathura and outside, at that time Vrindavan Krishna becomes unmanifest. But he is manifest in the hearts of the Vrajavasis. And that's why the Vrajavasi is in the separation from Krishna, their remembrance of Krishna becomes more and more intensified. More and more intensified. And in fact, Krishna considers that the devotion that the Vrajavasis have attained in separation from him is so extraordinary that it cannot be raised any higher. And they attain the summit of devotion. So Krishna is in Vrindavan in the hearts of his devotees. That's how Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. As Vrindavan, Krishna, he stays in an unmanifest form. And actually, this journey of Krishna out of Mathura, out of Vrindavan to Mathura also mirrors our heart. Our heart is not like Vrindavan, but it is meant to be like Vrindavan. Now, the gopi, the Vrajavasis, practice devotion in separation from Krishna. And we are also practicing devotion in separation from Krishna. Krishna is present in our hearts, but he is not manifest directly over here. This is Vrindavan, Krishna was not manifest in Vrindavan. However, there's a big difference. I was recently giving a class, and I was talking about how the Vrajavasis don't accept Krishna to be God. And one person in the audience raised the hand and says, I also don't accept Krishna to be God. So now, the Vrajavasis not accepting Krishna to be God is because of transcendence. And ordinary human being not accepting Krishna to be God is because of ignorance. So although the externals seem similar, but it's entirely different. So similarly, in this case, Krishna, for us, we are in separation. The Vrajavasis is separation from Krishna, that is transcendence. And there's Krishna's plan going on, because of which they get separated. Yes, we are separated from Krishna because of our ignorance. And for the Vrajavasis, there is already a very strong attachment to Krishna which is there. For us, that attachment is not there. But we also can develop that attachment. And we have to practice devotion in separation from Krishna. And while we are practicing devotion in separation, the more the hankering for Krishna grows, the more the longing for Krishna grows, the more the heart's aspiration for Krishna goes, the more Krishna will manifest in our hearts. So we are also practicing devotion in separation, and we also want to experience Krishna more. That's why when Krishna, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and he teaches, he says, practice devotion in the mood of the gopis, in the mood of the Vrajavasis. That doesn't mean that we have to all start acting externally like the gopis. That's what some people think. But what it means is that we recognize that we also have to practice devotion in separation. So by hearing about Krishna, by remembering Krishna, and by creating a longing for Krishna, we all can grow in our devotion. And we all can ultimately be united with Krishna. There's a whole different story of how Gopal Champu described Krishna does indeed come back to Vrindavan. Krishna honors his promise. And Krishna unites with the Vrajavasi. So similarly, we will also be united with Krishna in due course. But we need to keep longing for Krishna. The Vrajavasis never forgot Krishna. Never gave up their longing for Krishna. Similarly, if we keep longing for Krishna, trying to remember him and connect with him, then one day we all will be united with him. I'll summarize. I spoke today on this theme of why Krishna left Vrindavan and how he didn't leave Vrindavan. So I started by talking about how whatever is present in this world, there is union and separation. There is happiness and distress. That is present even in the spiritual world. But because it is all connected with Krishna, it is pure, it is transcendental. So the dynamic of union and separation is present in Krishna Leela also. So just as exile is there in the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, exile is there in Krishna Leela in the Bhagavatam also. To understand that, we have to follow our acharyas and zero in, zoom in on Krishna Leela to understand the inner working of the hearts of the characters. So externally, actually Krishna went from, we could say, rural to urban. So that was not an exile. But exile is to go away from those whom we love. And for Krishna, the Vrajavasis were those whom he loved more than his life. And to go away from them was a terrible exile for him. So why did Krishna leave Vrindavan? Because till then, Kamsa's attacks had been covert. Hypocrisy is the last respect that vice pays to virtue. So if Krishna had, and Krishna had also faithfully defied the demon, destroyed the demons. But if Krishna openly defied Kamsa by not going, then Kamsa would attack. And Krishna didn't want the playful, serene mood of Vrindavan to be disrupted. And Krishna's plan was to finish Kamsa and come back. But the Yadus insisted. They say that you are our son. You are meant to be our protector from Kamsa's allies. And Krishna had to be separated from the Vrajavasis. And Krishna had to stay on, not only stay on, but get completely disconnected from the Vrajavasis, having no contact with they visiting or he going back, because he didn't want any suspicion. And to be in the minds of his enemies the day that Krishna is close to Vrajavasis, and we can get back at Krishna by attacking the Vrajavasis. And Krishna's plight was worse than that of the Vrajavasis, because the Vrajavasis could at least talk about their object of love. But Krishna couldn't even talk. And then Krishna went away from Mathura to Dwarka. Externally, it was to protect the Mathuravasis. But internally, it was to protect the Vrajavasis. And through it all, the Vrajavasis, though separated from Krishna, their devotion for Krishna increased more and more and more in separation. We are also living in separation from Krishna. Our separation is not because of transcendence, but because of ignorance. But still, aspiring to long for Krishna's presence. If we do that, then we all will move closer to Krishna. And ultimately, we all will be united with Krishna in a bond of eternal love. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Do we have time for questions? Okay. Any questions?
I mean, it is said there is a devotee called Lota Baba in the Vrindavan pastime.
Devotee who?
Lota Baba.
Yeah,
he's sitting there from eternity waiting for Krishna to return. So how I should understand this? Because Krishna was revealed it in his heart too. He never left his heart. Like Krishna never left Vrindavan, right?
Okay.
So, but he's still waiting. He's still determined Krishna will return.
Okay. So how do we understand the Lota Baba's incident that Gopa is always waiting for Krishna to come back? if Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. As I said, that Krishna was not manifest in Vrindavan. If Krishna was literally like in a manifest form present, then the Vrajavasis would not feel any separation from him. So because that separation was to be induced so that the devotion could be heightened, so Krishna did leave and he stayed on in an unmanifest form. That's why that mood of separation got intensified. Now, as far as he waiting on and on and on, that indicates the determination of the devotee to wait as long as is required. So within the Lord's pastimes, different forms of analysis are done to convey different points. Say, for example, if we want to, in Ramlila, if you want to convey how Sita was always pure, then we will talk about how actually there was a Maya Sita and there was an actual Sita. It was only the Maya Sita that was taken. But then somebody might argue that if it's Maya Sita, then doesn't Ram know that is Maya Sita? Why does Ram have to go and get her also? But we have to understand that the point over here is to show how Sita is pure. But to show how the Lord is dharmic, how the Lord is ready to go to any lengths to protect, to do his duty of protecting those who are under his protection. That is, there's a different point to be taught over there. Or if you want to say how we should always be cautious in following the instructions for our protection, then we can say how Sita came out of Lakshman Rekha even for a good reason. That is, she wanted to serve a sage and she got into trouble. Similarly, we should stay in the purview of the instructions of our spiritual master. So for different contexts, to teach different lessons, different points are stressed. And we shouldn't overlap all these points because then it leads to rasabhas. So here too, especially the story of the Gopa waiting for a long, long time, that is meant to convey the as long as it takes. Vishwanath Chakradhakur says that in the section 637-45 in the Bhagavad Gita, in that purport, Chakravarti Pad says that the determination of the aspiring yogi should extend through multiple lifetimes. Even if I can't complete in this lifetime, future also I'm ready to continue. So different lessons are conveyed through different points. So this is the readiness to wait as long as required. That's conveyed through this. Thank you. Yes,
Krishna. Hare Krishna. Prabhu, you explained at the end of your class that we also practice the mood of separation at our stage by cultivating a longing for Krishna. Right? And Srila Prabhupada has explained that in the Introduction to Krishna book that Mahaprabhu came to teach how to practice Krishna consciousness in the mood of separation. And one should learn this from his pastimes. But to me, there's always been a missing piece in the puzzle. And maybe you can help us understand. Because it is not possible to feel separation from something that we're not attached to. Right? So although ontologically, I am separated from Krishna because I don't think about him all the time and I don't see him in front of my eyes, because I don't have any attachment for him, I don't feel separation. Right? Only I feel separation from something I'm really attached to. Like if I'm attached to my mother or if I'm attached to my laptop, if I'm separated from it, I feel some hankering. When will I see my laptop? When will I see my mother? You know, like this. Silly example, but I think you get my point.
Shunya itam jagat sarvam laptop virahe nandu.
I think today we learned that practically. So my question is, but at the same time, if we want to cultivate attachment for Krishna, it seems that separation plays a very important role.
Okay.
But to feel separation, we need to have some attachment for Krishna. Yeah. So what is the missing piece of the puzzle?
Okay, yeah, good question. So if we have no attachment to Krishna or attraction to Krishna, how can we possibly feel separation? So, okay. There are two different things going on over here. First is that, as you rightly said, that if we don't have attachment, then we don't feel separation at all. And that's our state at present. For most of us, at least, before we start practicing spiritual life seriously. So, that's why the initial stage, Athato Brahma Jigyasa, inquire about spirituality. So Ramanujacharya in his Sri Bhashya commentary, it's like 100-page commentary on this verse, this sutra basically. Like
not exactly a commentary, it's like an elaboration in different contexts. So he analyzes elaborately, where does this desire for Brahma Jigyasa come from? We have so many other Jigyasa. We have cricket score Jigyasa. We have political news Jigyasa. We have stock market Jigyasa. We don't have Brahma Jigyasa. So he says there are multiple causes. One is Puro Janma Samskar. It might come from previous lives. But most important, and Vishwanath Chakra Thakur also in Madhuri Kadambani talks about this. He said there are some people that Shraddha, Adav Shraddha. The Shraddha is Swabhaviki. It's natural, which comes from a previous life. But for some people, it is Balena Utpadita. Balena Utpadita is, it is forcefully generated. Not forcefully in the sense of imposed, but rather that is generated by the power of the presence and the preaching of great devotees. So, like, somebody so wise, so pure, so soft-hearted, and they believe in Krishna. This must be true. So, I don't have any faith myself, but because of my faith in them, I develop faith. So, similarly for us, initially, it is the association of devotees who are attached to Krishna. That is what is required. And it is when we are attached to devotees, then we start feeling separation from devotees. And gradually, by the association of devotees, then our attachment to Krishna develops, and then we feel separation from Krishna also. So if we see Srila Prabhupada's early disciples, they were so attached to Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada would just go away from one place to another, they would be crying in tears. And gradually, over the years, by practice of bhakti, the attachment to Krishna is also developed. So for us, attachment to devotees is what is the missing link. So, to the extent we, it works both ways. As devotees, as sadhakas, we need to get attached to devotees. And also as those who are senior devotees, they also need to be that pure, that gentle, that compassionate, that others become attached. So Krishna manifests his attractiveness in the world primarily through his devotees. And also in our spiritual lives, we may find that at different times, different devotees may manifest that attractiveness. And maybe in the initial years, we might be very attracted to one devotee. And as we grow, we may find that, okay, there's some other devotee. It's not that we reject the earlier devotee. We're grateful. But we have to see, we have to ultimately keep moving toward Krishna. So sometimes it might be some other devotee. So we have to become attached to devotees. We long for the association of devotees. And by that, we will slowly develop the attraction to Krishna. And especially, not just devotees, but devotees who are attached to Krishna, devotees who are eager for Krishna. And then when we sense their eagerness, when we sense their separation, then we also develop that eagerness and the separation. Thank you. Anyone last question? So, thank you very much. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Gaura Premanande.
His Grace Chaitanya Charan Prabhu ki. Just a brief announcement for those of you who did not get prasadam. There is some special rice downstairs. If you're feeling a little hungry, there's some prasadam downstairs. So feel free to go down and take some, honor some prasadam. Hare Krishna.
So as was mentioned, there are some books outside. There is a book on wisdom from Ramayana on life and relationships. Can you show me? So this is about, just like I told some Leela from Krishna Leela, this is 20 stories from the Ramayana which are narrated and life lessons are drawn from them. Practically how, why do sometimes good people do bad things? Like Kaikeyi did when she had Ram exiled. Or when bad things happen to us. How do we know whether to accept it as destiny or to try to change it? Whether Ram was exiled, he accepted as destiny. But when Sita was abducted, he didn't accept it as destiny. So why the difference? And also, the perplexing question from the Ramayana. After winning the war, why did Ram send Sita away again? So all that is answered in this book. And there are several other books like he mentioned. There is Gita Wisdom Through Quotes. And there's Demystifying. I mentioned about some stories of reincarnation. They are there in this book. This Gita wisdom through quotes. So this is one page, one quote. So you can easily read one quote and you can connect with the Gita. If you just Google this quote, you'll find an article connecting this with the Gita verse and explaining. So all these books are available outside if you want. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm.